Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon as we prepare for the arrival of Hurricane Dorian. Well, as a matter of fact, we'll talk about that for a few minutes with Tom. As always, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded for several reasons. One, to accommodate his sleeping schedule in light of the fact that he is some 5 hours ahead of us, but also due to preparations for Hurricane Dorian here in our community. So with that as the intro, I'll ask you first, Tom. Tell us a little something about the weather in London. It probably is a lot more bright and cheerful than what we're expecting here. But good morning, good afternoon to you.
Oh, good afternoon, stroke good morning. I think it's a little bit better than what you've got. Certainly a lot better than Bahamas at the moment.
Oh my goodness.
And better than Florida. It's overcast. We're starting to see some autumnal weather. The temperatures are dropping in a little bit. Still very nice. Very nice. Very pleasant. It's been a very pleasant summer.
Oh, well, that's a change. Last year it was a hot and dry summer, so this is a nice change for you. Okay, since we are talking weather, let's talk about the coverage of the big story here, at least on this side of the Atlantic, and that being Hurricane Dorian. How interested is the European community, UK community there in London? How interested is, how much coverage is that getting?
It's the number two story here. I mean,
really?
The number one story is obviously the political crisis.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the number two story is the virtual destruction of the Bahamas.
Right.
At the moment. And a corollary to that is, climate change.
Right.
You
know, I figured, yeah. Uh-huh.
A lot of people are saying, you know, we've had one hurricane right after another in quick succession. Year after year, and each year they seem to get worse, and yet people keep saying, oh, there's no such thing as climate change. And so a lot of people are saying, when are we going to wake up to the fact that there appears to be a link? It is certainly in the headlines here.
Okay.
Are a lot of reports of what's coming out of the Bahamas.
Okay, several items here. Number one, in light of the fact that there's climate change, we've always recognized there's climate change. On the contrary, climate change, not necessarily global warming, but climate change. But number two, insofar as the succession of the hurricanes, we've seen far more active seasons than we've had recently, and they do go through cycles. Even the climatologists acknowledge that. It is unfortunate that it continues to be a political issue, but obviously even there in the European community, it's considered a topic for political discourse. But the other aspect of this, in light of the concerns associated with the climate change, just out of curiosity, has anybody represented a solution? Has anybody said, okay, if we do X, this will result in Y? Has anybody done that there in the European community?
No, what they have said that we have to have more green technology to prevent it getting worse.
Ah, okay, okay.
No, so I think people accept that climate has changed and it's not changing for the better, but that we've got to do something to prevent it from changing so quickly before we lose control entirely.
Okay.
And for that, we need countries like the United States on board.
Well, and of course, the greatest polluter in the world right now seems to be China. But okay, we'll acknowledge that for the moment. Did you want the U.S. on board?
In fact, it is acknowledged that in many ways that the U.S. is not a great polluter, that it does have a great deal of green technology. The Europeans do recognize that, but that they say, that we need the United States to help coordinate international policies because it's a global problem. It's not just a national one.
Okay, let's stay with this thought for a moment. I know we're going to get to the issue of Brexit here in a few minutes, but other issues associated with the world politic. But I know that the European Union is looking at the creation of a natural disaster fund. And I'm also curious as to the approach to, and this has created quite a brouhaha, I always like to use that word whenever I can, with the president of Brazil over the Amazon rainforest. But let's start with the European Union's Natural Disaster Fund. Tell me about this, and how well received is something of this nature being, you know, there?
The Natural Disaster Fund, there is a Natural Disaster Fund.
Okay.
It exists. All regional and national governments will have a Natural Disaster Fund in case of flooding or hurricanes or tornadoes or what have you. What's different at the moment is that they are thinking about using the Natural Disaster Fund to help those companies affected by Brexit.
Oh, okay. We're going to get into
that. They're going to dip into the Natural Disaster Fund. Well, they're talking about dipping into the Natural Disaster Fund over Brexit.
Okay, and this is related to all countries and European Union countries as well as the UK?
No, not the UK.
Okay.
I mean, the UK. This is if there's a no deal Brexit.
Ah, okay. All right. Companies
and countries that are particularly adversely affected will make a claim, or they're thinking about allowing them to make a claim on the Natural Disaster Fund, where the funds will be available to them to help bear the cost of a no-deal Brexit. The UK, of course, by that time would be out of the EU, so it would have no claim on that fund.
Okay, that's interesting. I wasn't aware that we would get to Brexit on this issue, but let's talk about this Natural Disaster Fund. And I'm curious, is it used, in other words, is it like a giant insurance policy that all of the countries contribute to? And if so, what areas do they spend in this money? For example, is it conceivable that the Natural Disaster Fund could be used to assist the folks in the Bahamas?
Yes, I suppose it could. I'll be honest, I don't know for certain, but I would think it definitely could. I think that when Macron offered money, or when the EU offered money to Brazil recently, that would have come from the Natural Disaster Fund over the Amazon forest fires.
Right.
The Bahamas would certainly be something that they'd be interested in. Bahamas was, of course, a British colony. And there are a lot of Brits who still live in the Bahamas. So, yeah, no, it money could easily be going to the Bahamas from the Natural Disaster Fund. The sort of money it goes for, I mean, there are always floods. Recently, there was a dam which nearly burst here in the UK. There are floods in every spring, it seems, in Venice. All these things are unplanned. It's basically unplanned disasters.
Right, right. Well, yeah, and vast majority of disasters are unplanned. But the question for you, and I say unplanned, well, let's just simply say that you can't identify them in advance. They happen immediately. A case in point where this would not be the, well, I say a planned event. For example, the hurricane, at least we knew it was coming. Sadly, the longevity of it and the impact it's having on the Bahamas is another story. Quick question for you on the Bahamas related to the British connection. Will there be some assistance coming from the UK? And I know this is a little premature, but again, the coverage there in the UK, has there been any discussion about possibly fundraising efforts, things of this nature?
There are fundraising efforts going on at the moment. I know that when they had the hurricane last year or the year before, there are a few islands in the Caribbean which are still British territories, like Montessori and Cayman Islands, and they were affected, and the Royal Navy went in to evacuate people and to deliver supplies and things like that. Bahamas now, of course, is independent. I should think that there would be a private initiative. There'd be money coming from the Commonwealth, and there'd be money coming from Britain in the form of aid. but I don't know if there'll be military assistance like there was with the British colonies.
Okay, and I think this is a worthwhile discussion on the relationship with the UK and the Bahamas, as you pointed out, now an independent country as such. We're going to get back to more here, and we're going to stay on the issue of the environment for a few more minutes, and then we're going to get into the topic of Brexit, which will get very intense. But you're listening, of course, to Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints on the talk station, FM 107, AM 1240. Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, I want to chat about the issue of the environment, as we just mentioned a moment ago, about talking about the hurricane. I am curious about other aspects of the environment. We chatted briefly last week also about the rainforest. And though this is not on our list, I'm wondering, has there been any concern about Russia's efforts to create a nuclear facility in the Arctic?
Yes, it has been mentioned. Again, it's not huge. Russia's record on nuclear safety is very poor. And
right.
I think it's been mentioned in the context, and I'm not just talking about Chernobyl. I'm talking about submarines that have sunk. We recently had a missile which exploded. Back in the 50s and 60s, they don't have exact records, but there are probably thousands of people who died as a result of nuclear radiation. So the fact that they're thinking about building something in the inhospitable territory such as the Arctic, where things could go wrong, and where you have a virtually virgin environment, and so many other countries are bordering it, is certainly been discussed.
Okay, I was wondering about that in light of the recent failures there. You mentioned the submarine, but also Chernobyl, but a lot of other concerns associated with nuclear energy, and unfortunately a questionable or checkered safety record. Tom, let's move on to the, shall we say, the elephant in the room, that having to do with Brexit. I'm a little confused, but then again, that's a state of I'm in all the time.
Join the club. I would have called it more like a herd of elephants.
Yes. Okay. I understand that, and I was reading the news early this morning, very early this morning, that Boris Johnson has announced that he is going to call for a snap election. But he had to get approval for that, and I don't understand this whole process. So let's start with the fact that the other comment that I read, which I found interesting, was that he has created a constitutional crisis in light of the fact that there is no written constitutional directive or article associated with the cessation of parliament. So if you can, in the next 2 or 3 days, explain this to us.
Yeah, I was going to say, how long do I have?
we've got time.
I mean, it is complicated.
Oh, my goodness.
It is very complicated. Let's start with the fact that there is no written constitution.
Okay.
And also the fact that there is no division of responsibility between the different branches of government.
Okay.
In the same way that there is in America, where you have the checks and balances between the Supreme
right.
Court, Congress, and the White House.
Yeah, right.
In Britain, the Prime Minister has to have the support of a majority of the Commons to become Prime Minister.
Okay, now wait a second. Is it majority of the full Commons, House of Commons,
Commons?
Or just his party?
Not the Commons and the Lords, but just the Commons.
Okay,
They represent a majority of the members of Parliament in the House of Commons.
Okay.
Now, what happens is that the party selects its leader. If a party wins an election, it selects its leader and sends him or her to Buckingham Palace, where the Queen, who is titular head of, She's the titular head of the UK,
mm-hmm.
who is the nominal leader of the executive, but has no power.
Mm-hmm.
She then vests executive power in the prime minister.
Okay.
And so the prime minister acts in her name, but can only act in her name as long as he has the support of a majority in parliament.
Okay.
All right. Now, that's traditionally the way it's been. In 2008-09, we had an economic crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an election in 2010, and you ended up with a hung parliament. That is, no one had an overall majority. And so you had a coalition between the Liberal Democrats and the Conservatives. And they decided, because of the economic problems, we needed a period of political stability.
Mm-hmm.
So they passed something called the Fixed Term Parliament Act, which said basically that instead of that the government, whoever was prime minister and his government, would last for 5 years, that they were elected for 5 years. Previously, they were elected only so long as they had a majority.
Right.
Or the prime minister decided that the time was ripe for an election.
Okay.
Fixed Term Parliament Act changed that, but with the proviso that they could call an election if they had the support of 2/3 of the members of parliament.
Oh.
Okay. So he wants to have an election. Boris Johnson wants to have an election to sort out this issue of no deal Brexit. But he doesn't have a majority in parliament anymore. In fact, he's 43 seats short of a majority in parliament as of yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And so he would need the support of the opposition Labour Party in order to call an election.
But wait a second.
The opposition Labour Party is saying, we won't agree to this. At the moment, they're saying, we won't agree to this until you agree to take no deal off the table.
All right, wait a second. I want to interrupt you here. Here's a quick question for you. Why in the world does he want to hold an election which might remove him as prime minister? What's the value of having an election? Or am I mistaken in the procedure issue here of who's the prime minister?
No, you are not. It is a huge gamble. But this country has been deadlocked, or some people say gridlocked, for the past 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they want this situation resolved. Are we in, out, somewhere in between? We need to have a decision. And so that is why he has been basically saying, we are out, do or die on the 31st of October. And he's basically pushing it right up against the deadline here.
Well,
it's a gamble. It's a gamble for everyone. Nobody knows how it will go.
Wait, but
it's
this,
all up in the air, and it's total confusion.
None of this makes sense to us here in the States, but let's correct that last. Makes no sense to me at all. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Lookahead Radio with us with viewpoints around the world. Tom, the decision on a no-deal Brexit, that is that basically the agreement between the European Union and the UK is just torn into shreds, and starting November 1st, any transactions have to go through the various border patrols, the border crossings. They have to be, and on top of that, there are tariffs that will probably be introduced. So if there is no election, then what happens? I mean, there is no deal Brexit.
There is a law.
Uh-huh.
The law has been passed already, which says that if there's no election, if there's no law to repeal the existing law, we will by default leave the EU
right
on the 31st of October.
Right. So I'm sitting here wondering why the opposition to a snap, is it called a snap election? Is that the correct term?
Yes. Snap general election. Yes.
Okay. Why oppose it? I mean, you would think that there are folks that are so opposed to either Boris Johnson or the direction of the government that
they're not opposed to an election. They're opposed to an election before we have no deal taken off the table. They want to, they want a guarantee that we won't have a no deal settlement.
But then again, if you have an election and Boris Johnson loses, the new prime minister can take those actions. Can they not?
No, no. Remember what I said, Lockwood, that we withdraw from the EU without a deal, unless something's negotiated in the next few weeks.
Okay.
We withdraw without a deal on the 31st of October. That
right.
legislation's already in place.
So,
okay. So that they want to repeal that legislation effectively so that Boris Johnson's hands are tied, that he has to negotiate a deal before we can withdraw. And at the moment, it looks as if he doesn't want to negotiate a deal.
Well, that has been his statement all along. We're going to take a break here in just a moment with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio. We're going to continue this conversation for a few moments. Then we'll move on to other issues happening around the world if we have time. This is a very confusing issue. We're talking with Tom, of course, about Brexit. That is the exit of Great Britain from the European Union. That's why the term Brexit comes about. We'll get more details here in just a moment. So stay with us here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio. Joining us a little early today, and of course we are pre-recording this for several reasons. One, Tom is some 5 hours ahead of us, so as this is airing, he is sleeping soundly. And of course, we here in the region listening to the program and our listening audience are preparing for the arrival of Hurricane Dorian. So, Tom, back to the issue of another very stormy situation. Pardon the pun, there in the United Kingdom and Parliament. We've got this proposal for a snap election. The Parliament, of course, requires a majority to accept the snap election. If they don't approve the snap election, Boris Johnson remains as prime minister, but with an eroding support from his party.
Not necessarily.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No. He could engineer election himself. He could have a vote of no confidence tabled against him by members of his own party. He could force an election.
He could force the election, or his party would force the election?
Well, it would probably be he would try and engineer it.
Okay.
Because at the moment, he's ahead in the polls.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he at the moment, basically because Jeremy Corbyn, the leader of the Labour opposition, is so unpopular. He's very, very left wing.
Where's Lib Dems, which I know that your wife is a member of the Lib Dem party.
Well, and so am I.
So
yeah.
Are you. But what about?
And the Lib Dems are coming up in the polls, but they are that centre party. And like centre parties everywhere, they tend to be squeezed by the left and right.
Okay.
So they don't tend to win elections, but they could end up holding the balance of power.
All right, I'm going to clarify this very quickly and move on to other items associated with Brexit. What you're telling me is that it's a personality clash. No one likes Jeremy Corbyn, who is the leading opponent to Boris Johnson. Jeremy Corbyn of the Labour Party, Boris Johnson of the Tories, am I correct?
And Boris Johnson is becoming increasingly unpopular too.
But he's the better of two evils, if you will. All right, that's an interesting
issue.
Depends
on where you sit.
This is an issue not only related to Brexit, but personalities as well. Let's talk about the issues at stake with Brexit here for a few moments. In the case of an election, legal challenge. What legal challenge would you be facing?
The legal challenge will be appealed, but it went in favor of the government, in favor of Boris Johnson. It's just come out of the courts. Now, this was very interesting, and it's a sort of difference between the British and the American legal systems. The British system is much more formal. The judges are more inclined to look at the letter of the law rather than the spirit or the intent of what someone intended.
Right.
And the letter of the law is that Boris Johnson has kept very strictly to the letter of the law. But everyone knows his intent was to suspend Parliament in order to curtail debate on Brexit.
Now, the suspension,
and the documents to prove it.
But the suspension of Parliament, the suspension of Parliament was basically holding the Queen's speech just weeks before the 31st of October, right?
Yes, which is a perfectly legal thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But within the context of the Brexit debate,
gotcha,
sort of bordered on unconstitutional.
Okay.
But it's within the letter of the law, and that's how the court looked at it. You find a lot of American courts will look at it and they say, well, what was the spirit? What was the intent behind this?
Right. Okay. So
and rule accordingly. British courts won't do that.
Okay. Real quick question, because we do need to move on to other items with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio. Deselection of conservative MPs. What does that mean?
Well, basically, every member of parliament has to have the support of their local constituency.
Mm-hmm.
Or the members of their party in their local constituency, and they have to have the support of head office.
Right.
And when they're in parliament, they are attached to a party and they take the whip, which means that they vote the way the party tells them to do, at least most of the time.
Gotcha.
Now, what's happened is that Boris Johnson has said to people who voted against him, who are conservatives, if you vote against me in this election that they had last night, in this vote they had last night, I will, one, withdraw the whip.
Okay.
Withdrawing the whip means we will not support you in Parliament. And two, I will tell your local constituencies that you no longer have the support of head office and you will not be allowed to run for Parliament as a Conservative candidate.
Wow. Can he call?
So he's effectively thrown them out of the party.
But then again, his party diminishes significantly. Okay, we'll wrap it up with this question. What's the likely outcome?
Who knows? It really is. I mean, you ask any of the pundits, any of the political gurus here, and you will get the same response that I just gave you.
All right. All right. Tom Arms.
We are uncharted waters. We're the Titanic heading for an iceberg in uncharted waters.
Or headed for Hurricane Dorian. Okay. Joining us this afternoon, of course, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio. Tom, we're running out of time. I want to go to hit a few high points here. One that's kind of related, let's talk about the German elections, AfD, which is the, as I recall, the alt-right organization, very conservative organization in Germany. They had an increase in activity and success, apparently.
They did. And really, it's difficult to tell whether they did well or didn't do well.
Okay.
A lot of people, they were expected to win.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't win. And so in that respect, they didn't do well. On the other hand, they did better than they did before. So they did well. A lot of people, by the way, it's called the Alternative for Deutschland.
Uh-huh.
And it was in state elections in Saxony and Brandenburg. Now, those two states are in what's the old East Germany.
Uh-huh.
The old communist-controlled part of Germany. The Alternative for Deutschland always does well in East Germany because they have never caught up economically.
Right. Okay.
With West Germany. And there are sour grapes. You know, they're saying, why aren't you doing more to help us?
Right. Okay. So,
we want to be more like you. And so they have slogans like, let's complete the change.
Understood.
Meaning let's recover from the time that we were the German Democratic Republic.
Right.
So they always do well in the East. The CDU, that is Angela Merkel's party, and the Social Democrats, their coalition partners, are claiming victory because they're saying the Alternative for Deutschland didn't win as expected.
And
that it proves that they've peaked as a political power. And it's probably downhill from here, Whereas the alternative for Deutschland says, well, Proust won the way up.
All right. Well, it's all again, in your perception here. Let's move on to other items. Let's just stay in that region for just a few moments. Problem created by bitter memories of World War II continue in Korea and Poland. Interesting story there.
Yeah. It's not just Korea and Poland, but these are the most recent ones. You know, the 80th anniversary celebrations to mark the start of World War II,
right,
were a bit marred by the Polish government demanding more reparations from Germany.
Right.
And on the other side, of the world, you have the Koreans and the Japanese.
Right.
At each other's throats.
I think that's without going into a great deal of detail, I think that's a good point, and I'm glad you brought that up because we're still, quite frankly, fighting these wars. I'm moving on to another item because this is an important one, and quite frankly, we're running out of time, so I want to touch on first Iran. And recently, Iran had a failed satellite liftoff. The president tweeted out, a snarky comment for all intents and purposes. And, of course, now we have the U.S. doing more in the way of escorting oil tankers in the Persian Gulf. And I'm wondering, what's the view of Iran and the activities there and in relationship to the U.S.?
Yeah, you know, that has not been covered a great deal here.
Really?
You know, be honest, everyone is so focused on the political crisis in the U.K.
Okay.
You know, the only thing I've seen about it, you know, is what Mike Pompeo said about it recently. And I did see, President Trump's tweet. There hasn't been much response from Europe. They are still very annoyed mm-hmm. that the United States has dropped out of the Iran nuclear accord and would love to get you back in. The other thing that has come, just I think today was that the Iranians have released the crew of the British oil tanker that they seized.
Wonderful.
So, you know, that has, in a sense, relieved some of the tensions between the Europeans and Iran.
That's good news. And again, the Iranian issue is something that we're very concerned with here in the States as well. So I just was curious about the European community on that. Moving on to several other items and two items. Let's talk about Hong Kong. What's the opinion now in light of the fact that Carrie Lam has said that she's going to remove the extradition requirements? What's the feeling there in the UK? And by the way, is there an European Union? Is there a sense that the things are calming down in the that region of the world?
No, quite the opposite.
Wow. Okay.
They think that basically it's too little, too late. That the issue in Hong Kong has moved beyond extradition
mm-hmm.
to the much wider issue of
Chinese.
Long-term future of Hong Kong,
yeah.
And whether it's going to become part of China or remain autonomous forever or what have you. Recent things, for instance, it's widening into Taiwan now. The Hong Kong protesters are asking for asylum in Taiwan.
Right.
And they're asking the Taiwanese, and the Taiwanese authorities are considering it, which, of course, is going to infuriate the Chinese. Very interesting that there was a private conversation that was recorded, which was produced by Reuters, in which Carrie Lam said that she's basically sick of trying to ride two horses,
right.
The Beijing horse and the Hong Kong horse, and really, she would resign.
Right. I've seen that story, too. And, of course, it just shows the conflicts that are boiling under the relationships now with this concept of a two-China policy. All right, I've got to move on, but that is a concern there then in the European community, and particularly there in the U.K. in light of the fact that Hong Kong was one time a British protectorate.
A British colony.
Colony, okay, yes. Okay, but there is still focus on that in the U.K.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes. In fact, Carrie Lam is dual national.
Okay.
She's British-Chinese.
Oh, wow. All right, let's talk.
Married to a Brit.
Okay. Let's talk about.
Studied it, I think, Oxford or Cambridge.
Okay, let's talk about India for a moment. That is a big issue, and is it getting much concern there again in the European community?
It's getting some concern. Basically, we're talking about the northeast section of India, mm-hmm. A province called Assam, mm-hmm. and where a lot of tea comes from, Assam tea, which right. you may have heard of. What you had is a situation that goes back nearly 50 years to a war between India and Pakistan. At that time, there was an East Pakistan, which is now Bangladesh. And literally millions of people fled from East Pakistan / Bangladesh into the Assam province in India. A lot of these people were illiterate, you know, peasants who lived in shanty towns and things like that. They did not register with the state authorities when they moved into Assam. And now the Indian government, as part of its policy to sort out problems, is saying they're going to make all these people, 1.9 million of them, stateless.
And where would they go?
Well, that's just it.
Okay.
Nobody knows. They will probably go back to Bangladesh.
Then
Bangladesh doesn't want them. You know, it'd be very difficult. Bangladesh is incredibly poor.
Right.
They've already had to absorb the refugees from Rohingya. And there's nothing like nearly 2 million people coming from Rohingya.
Well,
these are people who've been living in Assam for 50 years.
Right. No, I think this.
So it really is going to be a problem.
Okay. Real quick question. I've got to go to a break. My question to you is anyone stepping in to, shall we say, mitigate this issue or probably
not at the moment?
Okay. This is a story we'll be watching with interest because just to remind folks, India is the single largest democracy and population in the world, and it's a major ally for the West and for particularly the United States. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Coming up in just a moment, the Cock Crow court case in France. I'm looking forward to hearing this. Stay tuned for more here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Joining us some 5 hours ahead of when this is airing. Actually, we're talking to him earlier in the day because it is nearly 11 o'clock as this program is airing live. Tom, wrapping it up with the Cock Crow court case in France. Excuse me?
Yeah. Well, this is a court case. It's coming up tomorrow. It's going to be a decision tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
And it's being watched with great interest in France because it's really part of the conflict between people who have holiday homes or vacation homes in the countryside and the local population. And what it is, one of the people who's bought a holiday home has taken someone to court because they have a cockerel who wakes up at 4 o'clock every morning and goes, cock-a-doodle-doo, or something
like that.
And carries on till 10. And so they are suing them for noise pollution.
No. I'm intrigued by this in light of the fact that I'm confident that the permanent residents, the farmers, whoever these folks are, were there in advance of the arrival of these of the plaintiff in this case.
Yes, absolutely. And this is being seen as a test case. There is this conflict, especially in France, where you have a strong rural, agriculturally based society in the countryside. And then you have people who buy up these country homes and go down there for the weekend or their summer holidays.
Yeah. And
there is this very big conflict in France between them.
Okay. The other question I have, and this is actually applies to the United States issues as well. I'm curious, does the European Union, do countries like France, like the United Kingdom, have zoning laws?
Yes, they do have zoning laws. I really don't know enough about the American zoning laws to be able to say how they compare.
I'm just fascinated. I'm fascinated that anyone would have a complaint in light of the fact that this was a, if you will, an historic use of the land and historic value. So the court case is tomorrow, you say?
The judgment is tomorrow.
Oh, okay. So the decision is tomorrow. Well, I'll tell you what, we're looking forward to hearing the solution to that decision next Wednesday when you join us, of course, barring any unforeseen challenges.
The rooster's name is Morris.
Morris the rooster. All right, we will be paying close attention to that. As always, Tom, very good afternoon to you. Very good evening to you. Thank you for joining us. And, of course, look forward to our conversation and our solution to Morris the Rooster's future there in France.
Well, thank you, Lockwood, and good luck with Hurricane Dorian.
Thank you very much. Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.